Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you.
Join the CCW UK Executive Exchange from 12th November to 14th November 2024 at the Hilton London Sion Park. Network with top CX leaders and explore cutting-edge strategies to transform customer experience. Don't miss out. Register today. More details on www.cxgoalkeeper.com/CCW Europe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Today I'm really thrilled because I'm Lynn Unsacker together with me. Hi Lynn, how are you?
Hello, so good to see you, Greg.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time and for sharing your insight. Because if you're speaking about thought leadership in our field, in customer experience, then the place to go is Lynn. She's helping us a lot. She helped everybody going through the 6PA exam, preparing for the C6P exam, and also learning a lot for what we are doing in our companies. And therefore, let's kick off this discussion. We are going to discuss about breaking silos, how CX-driven leadership transforms business outcomes. But before we deep dive into this topic, Lynn, could you please introduce yourself?
Well, sure. I'm Lynn Hunsaker, and I got my start in customer experience way back in 1991, maybe before some of the audience was born. So I'm super old, but it's all been fun these past decades. I've really enjoyed customer experience on my mind constantly. I started out as a voice of the customer manager in the strategic planning department of a global manufacturer. They had operations in about 15 different countries, and I was asked to be the chairman for a task force trying to identify our methodology for customer satisfaction. And then I went on to lead customer experience company-wide in a semiconductor company, starting out as voice of the customer manager and then becoming head of corporate quality and customer experience. I was there for about 11 years. I had a little bit of a marketing role at the end. And then since 2005, I've had Clear Action Continuum, where we were a consultancy for most of the time. And then in the pandemic, I switched over to almost all virtual short bite services that people can pay for with $15, $800, something in that range. So it's easy to get immediate satisfaction from Clear Action services, no waiting around for all that paperwork rigmarole.
Thank you very much for this introduction. And I'm also keen to ask the next question. Which values drive you in your professional life? We understand you don't like paperwork. It means you don't like administration, but I'm quite sure there are a lot more.
Yeah, I think trying to keep an eye on the bigger picture all the time with also attention to detail. So I would say I'm not really the best at all of it, but I tend to try to think of who else needs something. What does somebody need from me to move forward? So I'm always considering who are other team members or other parties related to us and people reporting to me that need something. What can I do to help them move forward as fast as possible? So that's been a big thing. And I guess I also got a lot of that through change management training, thinking about that systems thinking.
Thank you very much for this great introduction. We know now today's top player is Lynn Unsacker. And now let's kick off the game, Breaking Silos, How CX-Driven Leadership Transform Business Outcomes. To kick off the discussion, what are some of the key challenges that organizations face when trying to integrate CX initiative across the various departments?
Well, they're usually thinking of customer experience as something you're doing to the customer or something you're getting from the customer. And what I found from my early beginning in all of this was that customer experience work is really a team sport. And that's why I like your theme as goalkeeper. Being a team sport, it means that everyone needs to keep their eye on the ball. If you have a team player on a professional team that is not keeping their eye on the ball, they're not going to last very long, right? It's just a prerequisite. And what is the ball? The customer, right? So what I learned is that any group can inadvertently or sloppily hurt the customer experience, and therefore they all need to be tuned in. And so I think that that's the main thing that people need to realize, that customer experience, like employee experience, isn't really a thing, a program, a temporary deal that eventually you're going to be done, or, you know, never have to do that again, or it's those people doing it. It's just like a data responsibility or performance reviews. Everyone has to do it, even though that's an IT thing or an HR thing. It's part of what everyone has to do, right? So I think that that's the biggest lesson that I have, is that it's not just something you hand off to somebody. It's really more of a mindset and how you go about your interactions with one another internally, even possibly more than what you're interacting with customers externally.
I think what you're saying, it's really extremely important. And continuing with this metaphor of the customer being the bull, and all the department working together and watching to the bull and trying to achieve something together. From your point of view, or and from your experience, what are the best strategies that can be applied to create this cross-departmental collaboration in order to drive customer experience and already, as you mentioned, also to drive business outcomes?
Yeah. Well, I think the first step that you need to take is to broaden people's perspectives. Because people come to their work being concerned about just getting done what's on their plate. And usually people feel a little overwhelmed, like they have a lot on their plate. It's going to be a little tough. Maybe just stick with what we are responsible for. And they call that myopia, right? Myopia is just kind of like the horse in the parade with those little blinders on their eyes that they're just looking forward. They don't see anything in the peripheral vision. And that's poison to customer experience, because we know that customer experience needs to be seamless. And therefore, people do need to have peripheral vision, and they need to have a broadened perspective. And so how you do that is you find interesting things in the customer data. Sure, there's customer stories, there's anecdotes and comments that you can share, but there's also very interesting things that you can find in looking at the quantitative data. Like whenever this happens, customers are 3 times more likely to do X, or This always follows that, or, you know, there's patterns that you find that can keep managers' attention. And I always would try to find those on a continual basis and share them so that people were always anticipating, oh, what are we going to learn from Lynn? I see this next article or presentation or whatever. So that's the first step.
If you're speaking about the first step, I'm quite sure that you have additional steps.
Yeah, you want me to go on? So the second step is is to increase people's motivation. And how you do that is you have to make it personal. So people are usually thinking, well, let's make the customer survey personal. But I got an early lesson from a vice president I was working with. He said, we just can't put the survey in the bonus. And I thought, well, that's what you should do. And he says, no, because people can't control that. And for people's bonus, they need to be able to control what they're being rewarded for. And so he said, we're going to reward people for making the changes that are necessary for the survey to go up. And so that was my job, was to drill down to what were the changes that were necessary, what was really at the root of it, the heart of it. And so I engaged every group in doing that. But the main thing is to get their attention for this motivation. You show how much money is being wasted, going down the drain, the opportunities flying out the window because we're tying up our resources with value rescuing. And so when I could find those key issues that the customers were bothered about, some of them are totally obvious, and other ones you find out through doing a correlation analysis, maybe a Pareto analysis of customer comment themes and so on. You take a look at just whatever data you have on hand. You don't have to have the whole picture. The whole lifetime value equation isn't really necessary. But whatever costs or revenue you may have on hand, and just say, hey, back of the envelope math, this is just a quick and dirty. This is the tip of the iceberg. Did you know that such and such percentage of customers is not happy with this or wants this other thing? And did you know this issue is costing us so many thousands or millions. And people's eyebrows go up with that. And a lot of times they say that can't stand. Okay. Because when you also explain to them, hey, if we were able to cut this in half, or maybe cut it by 80 or 90%, because let's face it, you know, there's always exceptions or things happen, you know, a small amount of time, but you want to almost eradicate it, ideally. Wouldn't we love to have that money back? So it's kind of like when you're paying off a student loan and you had to be paying that for every month for so long, but now it's done. And so voila, you have like so much more discretionary income. So you explain to people that that can be allocated to higher salaries, more profit sharing, more hiring, or bigger budgets to do the things that you've been wanting to do. And in fact, you know, that's what people want, because they're always feeling limited by the budget that they have. Everyone wants more budget. That's personal. And then you also show that when we have that more budget, that we can hire those people or do those extra things, we're going to get more revenue, because some of the savings will go to more R&D and more marketing and sales and so on. So we're going to get more revenue in a lot of ways. We free up your customers, but they don't have to do all this waiting and administrative junk. Then your customers are able to be more productive and be more engaged and have less of a hindrance in recommending and so on. So it actually worked out. We put all that to the test, and sure enough, that does work. The third thing you need to do is nurture collaboration. And so how we did that was we established team recognition. Instead of having individual heroes and that type of thing, we set up a portal in the intranet allowing employees of any type, anywhere in the company, any level, to submit, here's what I'm doing to be more aligned with our customers, internal or external. Or here's what we're doing to take a pebble out of our customer's shoes. Or here's what we're doing to create more value for our customers. So we had very clear requirements and, you know, points allocations and things like that. So it was very transparent. The people teamed together, both officially and grassroots. And so it was things like that where we're encouraging certain behaviors. We had very specific things like, you know, find the root cause. Don't just throw spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks as far as your solution. But we wanted to see, you know, real quality tools being used. But that was one big thing. Also setting up some councils so that people got to know each other and coordinated their thinking, got at this similar mindset, things along those lines. Now, the fourth key to silos and getting cross-organizational buy-in and collaboration is you need to build in universality in the way that people start projects. So, for example, if I'm telling my staff member, please go and set up this type of a program. Well, the first step that they should take is a little bit of research. Who else in the company has done something like this before? So we don't reinvent the wheel. Who else is doing something similar where they might have some information for me or need information from me, and set those up. Like I mentioned at the outset, having those tentacles out there that anticipates and engages other people so that they can be productive and help you, help us help you.
Incredible four steps. Let's go back. We discussed about the first one. In relation to the second one, and I really tried to pick only a few topics because of the timing, but you implicitly explained on every step that you need to tie back what you're doing for additional revenues, decrease costs, this and that. And this is something that we are discussing a lot in the CX community, and therefore I would like also to listen to your opinion about that. And this is in particular, for me, it's clear for we are discussing that customer experience, it's not only a program, and therefore you're not calculating the return on investment on a small survey that you're doing based on the example that you did, but you tie that back to real business key performance indicators like revenues, bottom line, and so on. Could you share a bit why was so easy for you to tie that back and doing that without proving why this survey was so important?
Well, yeah, we decided that we had a lot of really good internal metrics, but we needed to focus the most on customer metrics. What was the, what I mean by that is, how was the customer better off? How are we saving them time? How are we increasing their productivity? How are we reducing stress and worry for them? How are we making things easier and more valuable to them? And that was first and foremost. In fact, that was what went on the bonuses. If you weren't making a change that customers would acknowledge, or even the recognition, you couldn't even get the recognition award unless you had customer testimonials saying, yeah, before, you know, it used to be this kind of thing that I didn't like, and now it's so much better, right? So when I'm looking at people's dashboards, as I'm invited into different companies to take a look and help them, I'm mostly noticing that there's zero customer metrics. It's almost all me, me, me. In fact, you know, even surveys, would you do this for us? Would you do that for us? Instead of, what are your values, or what are you aiming for, and how much are we helping you? Wouldn't that be great to be able to quantify that? I've also done some work with some clients where, you know, they had really good performance as an industry standard, really good. But when you looked at how the customer defined their end of it, it was a different story because they, you know, for example, on-time delivery, that type of thing, okay? You can be on-time delivery according to what you promise, like within a day's window or 4-hour window or something. But if the customer needed it at 8 a.m. or they needed it between 12 and 1, that's the window. I mean, that's the window. That's their expectation. And, you know, they have it for a reason. They're not just trying to be a jerk. I mean, because they had a lot of consequences when stuff wasn't right. And so when you redefine how you're looking at things according to the consequences that customers have, you start to realize, oh, well, even though we had good performance according to our industry, we didn't have good performance according to customers. And therefore, they wanted to spend X dollars with us, but they gave certain dollars to somebody else as an insurance that they would have stuff on time. And so they realized that they weren't even getting the full revenue that customers wanted to give them. And furthermore, they were making some of these requirements where the salespeople were not selling. They were out there taking pictures of stuff to get credit back or, you know, get an issue resolved. So when you're not allowing yourself, your customer salespeople to sell, you're not allowing your customers purchasing people to purchase 100% what they want from you. That's pretty ridiculous. And you just don't know that if you're not measuring it.
Exactly. And this is a key point. You mentioned the third step. It was around collaboration and internal support. And you mentioned the counseling piece. And I think this is also extremely important. And this is also a personal story or personal experience. I feel, and sorry for playing with the words, I feel that a lot of employees are feeling lost. Too many information coming from everywhere. There are too many requests, too many tasks to work with. And I think counseling could be really extremely important. And therefore, could you please elaborate a bit on that?
Well, I'm trying to remember what I said about counseling. We may have a bit of a syntax issue there.
You mentioned that people work together, they try to work together. And then it's also important to support these people and creating something like counselors, or that's what my understanding of what you said.
Okay, I think I know. Well, first of all, I think we're in information overload, right? And the tech companies for CX have really gotten people's attention with real-time VOC, real-time this and that. There's just frankly too much real-time stuff happening. There's only so many minutes in an hour and so many hours in your workday, and people want to have a balance even more than they did before the pandemic. And so we need to get off of this real-time craze to some extent and allow people a bit of slack time, right? And the slack time that we allowed people was, we didn't do more than an annual relationship survey. And then we had transaction surveys when people like bought the spare parts for, did an installation of, you know, the equipment. So because we already had salespeople and service people and, you know, interfacing with a customer, we had people, even engineers, on site with customers. So we had eyes and ears. One of the good examples I saw from that was from EMC, now part of Dell. They created an app so that anybody, any employee, can use their mobile device to input, here's something I heard or noticed about a customer. And it goes to a central database. And then so you're collecting real-time data all the time, but you're not requiring people to just, you know, like look at the screen constantly. So what you do is you free up people to get to the root cause and work the root cause. Otherwise, you're constantly on the phone. Oh, I'm sorry, but we can't do anything about it until we buy that next software that's $7 million. And that's probably not going to happen for 3 years. You know, customers don't want to hear that. They just want stuff to work. They want to see that you're making change quickly. And so we worked through CDX champions that we had in every business unit. And some of the counseling was with them where they would, you know, represent and also inform us what's going on in every business unit. So it went both ways. I'm not sure if I've 100% dialed into what you're asking, Greg.
That's perfect, because these are really tangible insights that people can, if they are taking notes, and that's what I suggest to the audience, they can directly reuse in their businesses. And basically, coming also to the fourth point that you mentioned, one sentence that I wrote down is, don't reinvent the wheel when you are doing projects. It means, you mentioned, if you start an initiative, ask the other people if somebody already worked on this topic and what are the insights, not to restart again from scratch. And I think this is extremely important. And in the same question, I know that I'm asking two different questions, but let's work through them. The first one is, yes, I understand what you are saying, but basically, and this is also personal experience, if I go back to other people that already tried to solve an issue, they will tell me, or they told me, oh, we tried, we were not able to solve that, and you are not the guy that can solve that. And basically, perhaps, do you have some suggestion or some experiences that you can share how to transform perhaps projects that were not so successful, but trying to change something to make them then successful? Because there is often also a lot of negativity about the project that didn't went well, and nobody wanted to restart them. What's your view on that?
Well, you call it organizational learning. Organizational learning means, well, let's do a debriefing after everything, whether it went well or not. And you keep records of here's what we want to repeat and here's what we don't want to repeat. And so those debriefings are so important for future. It can be like future as in 5 minutes from now, or future in, you know, 2 years now, 2 years from now. But that's organizational learning. And part of how we started to embed that as a practice, as a habit, was we made it part of the recognition requirement. You couldn't get your recognition award unless you did some kind of lunch and learn or something where you're sharing with another group. Here's the lessons learned. So say, for example, you design something for customers. And in the course of your research at the beginning of human-centered design, always you have to understand the customer's world. You started to realize that there's this pattern and that pattern with customers. And so, you know, catering your design set accordingly. Well, who else in the company should know that? Maybe billing, maybe facilities, right? Because they do things that touch the customer. And so you're thinking outside the box a little bit. Well, that's the whole idea of human-centered design, outside the box, right?
Yes.
to bring those people in. And so when you make things transparently listed out as these are the requirements to get the award, people start to realize, well, that's what's valued in our culture. That's what's going to get me ahead. And so it's not only just the people that are participating in the recognition program, but because you're advertising these criteria all the year long, you know, using a lot of creative ideas to, you know, encourage people to participate in the recognition, it just becomes like, oh, okay, yeah, that we know that. That's how we try to do it. You try to model those things with your CX champions. And we had training for all of our CX champions in the business units from the organizational development people on change management techniques. And so I know a lot of people love ADCAR and whatever. I don't find those models, I don't find any of those models to be sufficient for change management and customer experience. Because the most important thing is to take the pebbles out of people's shoes, to remove the resistance factors. And you can't just do that, you know, making a mandate or, you know, saying you're stupid for having those fears. So that's the other part of what you talked about is fears, right? If people don't want to try again, how do you get a project or a program or an effort that flailed to revive? So it's all about fear of failure, fear of being embarrassed or having, you know, consequences that you didn't make a good decision. Nobody really wants that. And so you have to make it safe for people to make, missteps. In fact, people are making missteps all the time. Otherwise, you wouldn't have very much volume coming into your support. You wouldn't have very much churn, right? So let's just face the facts. We are human. We're actually making more missteps than we realize because otherwise you wouldn't have churn and support besides those things where customers moved or, you know, whatever. So, the thing is, what are we learning? You take the word failure out, take the word mistake out. There's some companies who have a swear jar. You have to put, you know, $1 in the jar every time you say failure or something like that. So there's certain words that are banned, and that gets people in the habit of having to chuckle about it and rising above. So there's different techniques that you can use, but that's the main thing.
I really like this example because these are examples or suggestions that we all can implement, and they don't really cost a lot, and therefore they help throughout this transformation. We are coming to an end of this game, but in the extra time, I still have three questions for you. Fast forward, in 10 years from now, we are back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. What we are discussing about?
Well, I know what I wish we were discussing about, but given that I've been in this field for more than 3 decades, I think we'll be talking about the same things.
And what's your wish? What's your wish?
My wish is that we would be talking more about value creation with, I don't know. I mean, I think that we have so much cleanup to do, and CX is essentially a cleanup crew these days in one way or another, because there's people that are creating issues. And therefore, somebody needs to solve it so that there's a buffer for the touch point and for the customer. So even some of the digitalization and the design things are a response to poor foresight or sloppy handoffs elsewhere in the company. So I wish that we weren't, you know, bogged down by that. I wish that we were able to say, look, we don't create shrinkflation. We don't create austerity. We don't create inflation. We don't create uncertainty among our coworkers. Our coworkers know what to expect from us because we're consistent. That we have a personal standard for consistency and a company culture of consistency, and that's really important for accountability and trust and relationship strength internally and externally. Whatever you're doing internally is going to play out externally unless you have really strong buffers. But eventually customers will see through that.
Thank you very much. And let's hope for the best. What's the best way to contact you?
Well, I think LinkedIn is probably the easiest thing. I'm monitoring it almost all the time because I do a lot on there. LinkedIn.com/in/Lynn Hunsaker, all one word. But otherwise, go to clearaction.com and contact me there.
Thank you. And I think we can find also all your valuable trainings there, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And now we're coming to the last question. Is Lean golden nugget? It's something that we discussed or something new to leave to the audience with.
Yeah. The main definition for customer experience I found to be the simplest is a one-to-one ratio between customers' expectations and realities. It plays out for employee experience the same way, partner experience, And it's not about interactions necessarily. It's just about expectations. So get crystal clear about expectations and then deliver to it.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for your time. Please stay with me to the audience. For today, it's everything. Thank you very much for your time. I hope that you enjoyed this discussion as much as I did. Please follow Lynn on LinkedIn. Please watch out our website. Buy the trainings. They are not, as Lynn said at the beginning, it's from a few dollars to $1,000 or something like that. I think you can learn a lot. Find a way to take time, because at the end also, learning is our duty in what we are doing. We need to get every day a bit better. Thank you very much. And also to you, Lynn, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, Greg. Thanks so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.